Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All right, it's 105 on the show. Chris Ranji, Amy Marsh, of course, Kevin Wheeler with you. We have Ed Wheatley in studio. You know his work for sure. You may have seen the book, St. Louis Browns, The Story of a Beloved Team. You may have seen the book about wrestling at the Chase. The newest book, though, is what we're here to talk about today with Ed, and that is St. Louis Sports Memories, Forgotten Teams and Moments from America's Best Sports Town. Good to see you, Ed. How's everything going?
Glad to be back. We're kind of busy now. The book
came
out this week.
Man.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a lot under the heading of the title of the book I just gave you. Right. So give people a kind of a synopsis. What should they expect?
Well, I mean, it's a lot of wild moments. I mean, it's also justification that, you know, we have this diverse history in so many areas of sports. You name it, it's in the book and captured. You know, we capture the moments, the teams, the people. And, you know, it is just one of those things that find a city that's pretty hard to argue that we don't have the best sports history. I mean, you can say, oh, New York or this, but hey, we've taken away, we're even the chess capital of the world, you know?
That's right.
From New York.
Yeah, with all the...
Oh, we've been talking about that.
Yeah.
And chess
we've been talking a lot of chess.
And I know the last week or two, which I'm trying to think, is that good or bad?
You didn't put that...
All attention is good attention.
I'll tell you what, I know the book just came out, but you might want to start over and include the what happened.
The Sinkfield Cup.
Yeah. You got to put that back in.
I mean, St. Louis was as we said, today it's the world capital of chess. Mm-hmm. It was the bowling capital of the world.
That's right.
The soccer capital of North America. I mean, it just goes on and on that it all focused. We were the wrestling capital of the world. It all focused here. And it's not about the championships. I mean, yeah, we had great championships in baseball and, you know, football. But, I mean, there's the inside, behind-the-scenes stories. Like, you tell people, hey, you know, there were four NFL teams in St. Louis. And people go, huh? You say there were four Major League Baseball teams, or the Blues were not the first NHL team, and people will go, it was the Flyers. No, it wasn't the Flyers. Flyers were a minor league team. And when the Hawks came here and, you know, in their great years and, you know, won a championship, they weren't the first NBA team. And it's things like that, or, you know, St. Louis U won the basketball tournament, the NIT in 48, before the NCAA became the thing. Mm-hmm. We won it here. It was David versus Goliath, this team from New York. And it was all St. Louis players on that team that won it all, led by Ed McCauley.
Yeah, we were talking about Ed McCauley just a couple of months ago when Bill Russell died, because that was such a big part of early basketball history.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Pettit was great, drafted the year before, still holds all these rights. And the Hawks actually had the rights to Bill Russell and how that transpired and how he got to Boston. And that's actually how Ed McCauley got to St. Louis. But what would have happened if Bill...
Right.
Here. Yeah.
We might still have the team here.
That's what I was wondering, if that would have affected it. I mean, I know it's difficult, maybe impossible to know that, but Russell stayed.
They went head to head with the Celtics multiple years thereafter and lost. How many would they have won if Russell would have not been wearing green?
Do you think that would have changed the course of what happened with the Hawks?
You know, it's hard to tell what was happening in the 60s. You know, there were those who, you know, it was a different time. There were some racial issues across the country in St. Louis, and, you know, people had got upset when they were seeing, you know, five African-Americans starting for the Hawks. And it was, I mean, you go read the papers, because I tried to very gingerly walk and work through this. It was also the time, you know, the Blues were coming into play here. The St. Louis Soccer Stars were coming into play here. So all this was happening right at the same point. And, you know, it's interesting, Bill Bidwell earlier had threatened to take his football team, the Cardinals, to Atlanta. He needed a stadium. Well, that's when they came and built a stadium, Bush 2, down here. And then Kerner and the Hawks decided, well, we're going to fly our wings down to Atlanta. Hmm. So there's all these little intersections. I mean, you know, the history is just phenomenal. And like I said, find a city. I mean, St. Louis had the first woman owner of a major league team. Mm-hmm. We had the first woman who owned an NFL team, brought her team to St. Louis.
Right, Georgia.
She, No. Got to read the book.
You're right. Give me that damn thing.
And she not only brought her team to St. Louis, she had an NFL title. Violet Bidwell. She is the one who brought the team to St. Louis. Her husband had owned the team since the 30s. He died in 47.
Uh-huh.
The Chicago Cardinals won the title in 47. She got into it with the NFL. At first, she wanted to go to Baltimore. They wouldn't let her. And then they finally gave in when AFL team was looking to move to St. Louis. So they let her bring her team to
St.
Louis.
So this is how the title came about, right?
Yes.
Forgotten things, like people like me not knowing them?
It's, you know, relive the memories.
What about the 1950 World Cup team? How many St. Louisans were on that team?
Well, there were five. One didn't play, but, you know, I call them the Fab Four from the Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, what they did down there. And, you know, soccer, I mean, you know, you go into soccer, we may have not had quite the success we've had in the last decade, but St. Louis U still holds the record for most Division I colleges. Championships. And if you go through this, Flo Valley had 13,
mm-hmm.
both women and men. They had 10 in a row in the men. I mean, and Karen Lombardo was the first recognized female soccer coach from the junior college. And it was, you know, between SLU, Merrimack, SIUE, Flo Valley, Forest Park Community College. St. Louis had this string of finals in soccer in college. Over like a 30-year period, it was almost every year one of them was in there.
You know, I'm just thinking about this now, and I'm assuming you know about it. There's the film, I want to say it's from like 2005, 2006, and it's about, and Gerard Butler's in it.
Right? From the World Cup thing.
Yeah.
And the guy from Tool Time, the one son from Tool Time was in it too.
Is it Jonathan Taylor?
No,
right?
It wasn't Jonathan Taylor. It was the older
one?
Brother. I can't remember
okay.
his name.
But it's about that. They filmed it on the
hill. Yes, they did. They went up the hill. We've got pictures and all that in the book from them.
Tried out to be an extra in that movie.
You did?
Yeah.
You didn't make it?
I guess I don't look like an Italian from the hill. I don't know. I didn't count.
I don't know what you look like. But okay, that's interesting.
They didn't want me.
one of my favorite. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I was laughing at Amy.
I don't know why.
All I got to do is stand there. You're an extra.
All I did was stand there. And I was trying to think of reasons. Why didn't they want me?
We went, it's just even these nuggets. And, you know, your listeners are going to remember as we talk about this. You know, I got into racing because, you know, over across the river now, racing is really big. But it's always been here, whether it was horse racing over at mm-hmm. Fairmont and Cahokia mm-hmm. and David Gall and all his records he sent here. But there was a Hollywood legend that was always here out in St. Charles. You know, I always talk about in the book, you know, in the late 60s and 70s, if you were driving around, you only had an AM radio in your car, and on Curl or KAXOK, you would hear, "Be there this Saturday, MAR Mid-America Raceway." They had this commercial, and people, they say, "I hear that as I read it," you know, and that's what you try to do as a writer, bring that. Paul Newman was regularly driving his Datsun out in Wentzville.
Oh.
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah, I didn't
For
know
real.
About that.
For real. I mean, these are the, like, nuggets you dig. I mean, you know, we had the Golden Girls of tennis in the 60s.
Oh, Amy, I thought you meant the Golden Girls.
Amy was about to go crazy.
I stopped breathing for a second. I'm a
She's like,
huge
oh!
fan. The Golden Girls were here.
I mean, you know, I go over to their house, and they were, you know, they've got all their medals and trophies from Wimbledon, the French Open, the Australia Open, and it's amazing.
What do you consider to be the golden era, if there is one, of St. Louis sports? Because the Cardinals have been good for a very long time. They were good in the 60s, too. And we had basketball then, too. So as you look back, what do you think?
Well, I think there's two parts to it. Is that one, it's one of these histories that never really stops, and it's continuing to grow. I mean, you go into the 20s. I mean, the Cardinals were terrible before the 20s. You know, the Browns came in and did very, very well. But then, you know, the Cardinals were winning pennants in 26 and 28, and then came the Negro League St. Louis Stars, and they won three championships in the first era of the Negro Leagues, which, you know, went from 1920 into 1931. They won three of those.
And they played over by where Harris Stowe is, right?
They play in the field there at Harris Stowe, right next to Chaffetz. That was their stadium, Star Stadium. So, I mean, you had the 20s. The Depression had some lag, but there's this history of hockey and basketball that is big. In the 30s, in the 40s, you know, the Cardinals win in 42, 43, 44, 46. And then comes the early 50s, because in the 50s, you start getting hockey and mm-hmm. basketball and football. And then when the 60s come, and, you know, like I said, the football Cardinals came in 60, the Cardinals have 64, 67, 68. the St. Louis Stars become a pro hockey.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
I mean, soccer team, and you had all this build, and you know, like the 50s were full of the Hawks and all their winning ways.
I'll tell you, I'm just in the, what, 8-9 minutes we've been talking about this, I found four things I'd not known.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what the book is really about. I mean, you know, the bowling. St. Louis was the bowling capital of the world, as we spoke a moment ago.
I remember
ago.
The
Dick
Hall of
Weber,
Fame.
Don Carter. All these guys, Ray Bluth, you go to Ray Bluth, he's got all the stuff out on his dining room table. He's got his Budweiser uniform. You know, I mean, the Budweisers were the toast of the town. And in 58, when they set and blew this record apart of all-time, you know, bowling, that record had actually been set by the Herman Undertakers in St. Louis several decades earlier. And as I was writing this, I found out in 2020 that the record is now held by St. Louis teams.
Mm.
Down in Concord Lanes, they hold the total of a 3-game, and then there's another team that holds the 1-game most pins for all that. So, I mean, it's just unbelievable.
So where's the best place we can direct people to find out more about the book, to order it, to pick it up? Obviously, I'm assuming bookstores all over town.
It hit all the stores on Monday. It's everywhere, anywhere you get books online, or any retail mortar store. Hey, Schnucks has them right there at the checkout.
There you go.
They had the Wrestling of the Chase book. You can get it at ReedyPress.com, or you can go to Wheatley Book and Films, where all my books and films are.
Sounds good. The book's called St. Louis Sports Memories, Forgotten Teams and Moments from America's Best Sports Town. Ed Wheatley, the author. Thanks for popping in. We appreciate
you. Thanks, guys. Thanks
we'll
for being
talk
back.
Talk to you soon. And all obviously, right. Now I got some more things to learn, so make sure I hang on to that copy of the book.
All right. Enjoy.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking a bit about music, like what makes us like what we like. We'll set that up, get some of your reaction on a few things coming up next on the show.
Yeah, exactly, Kevin.
121.
That's right.
On the show, Franch, Amy, Wheeler. The show goes on during the commercial breaks, most commercial breaks.
Unfortunately.
And I'm tired.
You're tired?
Yeah.
The newsroom feels sorry for me.
Guess who walked in with an attitude this morning and took her like an hour, and I guess I gave it away, didn't I? I mean, it took her like an hour and a half before she finally got with it.
I didn't have an attitude. I was out of it.
You're totally out of it. And then you took offense to me pointing out that you were out of it.
And then I explained why. I said, when there's an element of truth, it hurts my feelings.
Also, a lot of it is how you say something, not what you say. Because Amy said, well, yeah, but if you want to point that out, you should be like concerned.
Yeah,
and
like, Amy, are you okay? You seem
better.
Out of it.
Why would I be concerned?
And you're like, hey. Figure it out, Amy. Figure it out. He's all like Will Ferrell. Like, which movie was it? Oh, the Tropic Thunder?
Tropic Thunder?
Tropic Thunder, no. They were the Tropics. What was the basketball movie he did?
Oh.
Where he's losing his mind and there's like, we gotta keep our calm!
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, you're thinking of Old School.
No.
Yeah, gotta keep our composure and he's...
Oh, that's right. That's in the trials there. I thought it was the basketball speech.
It was, no. Here's the thing. It was National Coffee Day. And I had been up for a long time. I know you guys are late sleepers around here, but I had been up, but I hadn't had coffee yet. So I was just, the coffee was kicking in.
You have already been awake for 9 hours.
Right.
Amy, there are three.
What in the world?
First of all, we don't get up late. We get up at normal times. You wake up when two other people in the city have gotten up.
Wakes up the roosters.
You get up at like 3:30 in the morning.
4:30.
That's outrageous. Mm. I mean, you're not a CEO. You're waking up at 4:30. Hey, people who run companies, they get to work early.
I'm not a CEO. Well, okay.
Well, you know,
I'm not making any judgments about your career because we're in the same spot. We're in the same spot. I'm just saying you don't need to wake up at 4:30.
Every time Ron is like, oh, my life decisions, and look at you. Well, we're here. You're right. I should question my life decisions. It's kind of like when we were talking about the rapture. Yeah. And how the big surprise of the rapture would be that Kevin and I are still together.
Yeah. Well, wait. So I don't think we did that on the air, but it was supposed to be the other day, right? Like last week, there was a day that somebody had forecast it was the day of the rapture.
And was it a Q thing?
No.
I think it was one of the old-timey things.
No, I don't think it was old-timey. It was relatively new, but there was a group of people that thought the rapture was supposed to happen like last week. And Amy's like, wait a minute, but we're both still here. And I'm like, I would still be here. There's no question about that. Like me and Ranj, it might have been when you were out.
I think I was out. I don't remember
this.
I
said it'd just be the Ranji Wheeler show at that point.
Yeah.
There's no question that we would still be here.
Yeah, okay. It'd be like if we were flying American Airlines and somehow I'm in the same boarding group as Kevin. I'd be like, oh my gosh. And then we're still on the same plane.
How are we in the same group?
I don't know, but I love these conspiracies that this date is going to be a date. I'm still waiting on 2012 to happen.
This past Saturday, the 24th, was supposed to be some huge QAnon day where there was going to be a big natural disaster and it would lead to Trump being back in the White House and the whole electrical grid was going to go down. How'd that go?
I don't know. Unless we're in a simulation, I don't know. Maybe that's responsible for the hurricane.
Oh, it just changed to another date.
Hey, let me ask you this question.
It'll be some other date.
I just mentioned 2012. What was the date? Was it December 23rd of 2012? Do you remember?
The Mayan calendar?
Yeah, the Mayan calendar thing. Like, because this is the 10-year anniversary. Should we celebrate whenever it happens?
That's a great idea.
That's right. We made it 10 years past the end of the world.
Right.
Or did the world end?
And that's what I'm.
Don't know it.
We're in the Matrix. I don't know.
Or we're in purgatory.
That I believe.
Amy's in purgatory for sure.
I've done something wrong in my life, obviously.
Amy's. Wait, would it be your purgatory or your hell if you're stuck with us?
That's a great question.
You could have done a whole lot worse than this. You could have done better, but you could have done
it's
a whole lot worse.
Probably purgatory. You're probably right. Hey, do you entertain any conspiracy theories? If you had to entertain one.
I used to entertain the JFK one.
Which one, though?
That there was
just more than one shooter.
Yeah, I just don't think so. I think it's possible there was somebody else, and I think it's possible that Oswald was part of a plot, but I definitely believe he was involved. 100%.
Oh, I mean, like,
he wasn't involved?
So I literally
Lee Harvey.
I just watched a new documentary about this within the last month. And it's new, like new material going over all the old video, all the old evidence again, like with a more modern look. And it was a pretty convincing case that
he did it himself.
No, that there's more to it than what the Warren Report says. It doesn't like say they don't go, it was the CIA or it was the mob. But I mean, when you look at a lot of the stuff that was left out intentionally from the Warren Report, like they just refused to even address things.
Okay.
It makes you wonder.
Well, the explanation of the magic bullet theory, for example.
That's one of the things. That's nonsense.
What's the magic bullet theory?
You don't know the magic bullet?
So you've seen the I'm not a conspiracy theorist, so I don't know.
Okay, so here's the magic bullet. Lee Harvey Oswald shot it from the book depository. It went through JFK. Hit the governor in front of him.
Well, no, it made a right turn.
Yes, it made a right turn in midair, went through the shoulder of the governor, went down, turned, hit a rib, broke his wrist, came out, hit his leg, and that bullet was pristine, no damage.
However, they talk about there being a right turn in midair, but the reality is the seats were offset.
That's correct.
So it did make a perfect straight line.
But the other stuff, and again, the bullet they call the one that did the damage is pristine, has no marks on it all, and the forensic pathologist said there's no way a bullet hits bone and has no mark on it. So there you go.
Debunked.
There you go. That's your conspiracy theory. All right, it's 1:34. You guys like? I'm not going to ask you. Ron, do you like Living Color?
I do.
Fantastic, man. I saw them open for the Rolling Stones in 1988. They were really good.
I feel like we've heard it a little too much the last few months, but
I love
Living
Color.
Yeah, I do too. I think I need a break from it for a while, though.
That's all right. I like it. I like it a lot. What we wanted to get into here was what makes us like the music that we like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a study that kind of shows a connection between your personality and what music you end up like really getting into. And they said the age that you normally kind of hone in on that is around 14 being a sweet spot. But basically between the ages of 13 and 30, you kind of settle in on the stuff that you really like. And it's not that you never change. And it's not that the styles will never change. It's just that based on your personality and some external factors that around that time, you settle in the kind of genre of mm-hmm. things that you like.
That's fair.
Did that work with you guys? Did it work that way with you guys?
I don't know. I think, yeah, maybe to an extent. Like the stuff that I liked high school and in college is maybe my favorite overall. But I feel like my musical tastes are fairly broad outside mm-hmm. of that.
Sure,
with the exception of, like, I don't really care for country music all yeah. that much. But otherwise, I like most things. But yeah, I would say that my absolute favorite stuff probably happened in my late teens, early 20s, which and all the way through my 20s.
Which is funny, but I'll say late teens for me.
Was it for you?
No, and even early 20s, I'm completely different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you've gone away from what you used to really
yeah.
be into.
No, not like I went from metal to country, but just...
You were metal?
No, that's the thing. No, I was never super heavy music, you know, heavy metal. I was never really country music, pop country, I should say, never pop country. But I listened to more rocky type stuff, southern rock type stuff, and then also some pop music that I just do not listen to now.
Okay. And another part of this, though, is that not only do you kind of not settle in, but you kind of figure out what you like in mm-hmm. that range. But it says between 13 and 30, Amy. So
yes, mine was late 20s.
They said generally around 14, but it's really in that range. But it also ties your personality to your music. Like, do you mm-hmm. and so do you guys think that the music you listen to is somewhat of a reflection of how you are?
Yes.
Generally speaking, not like every day, not all the time, but that it's somehow kind of reflective of what you are, what your personality is.
Brilliant and handsome, yes. Okay, your music is angry, that's perfect. Amy's music that she likes is boring. So it's perfect.
All right, so what we did in advance of talking about this was we'll bring it to you guys, and you can chime in if you like, if you think your music fits you, or maybe it's the opposite of what you are, 314-436-7900. But we picked out one thing that kind of, I don't want to say sums up all of what you like,
right.
but one that you would say is kind of a sweet spot for the kind of music you like. That's what we picked out.
Yeah.
So, Amy, you're going to go first.
Okay, and it is a bit more country, I think, then people would be surprised, than people would anticipate, because I don't like pop country music, but overall, I like chill music.
Uh-huh.
So everything from, like, you know, Elton John, I like listening to that type of music. The Beatles, there's something kind of chill to it. I like The National, which is has been described the soundtrack to depression, but I do like The National. But to kind of sum up that spectrum, I picked Lucas Nelson and The Promise of the Real, because over the past couple of years, he has been one of my absolute favorites.
If I lose my pain, I'll tell you where they can play.
Wait, who's his dad?
Willie.
This is Willie's kid?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Now that you say that, you can hear it.
Yep.
I wouldn't have thought that independently of hearing you say that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And again, it's definitely a more country. He is on the furthest countryside that I listen to. Him and Chris Stapleton.
Stapleton's
yep,
good.
Are the two that I listen to. And then the rest of it moves kind of to...
The pop stuff?
Well, I don't know if The National is pop.
Oh, I thought you meant... Okay, never
yeah.
mind. I thought you were talking
no,
about country.
No,
like
no,
the,
no.
Pop
the pop country,
country I can't get
no,
into.
No, I cannot get into it. But that's why Lucas Nelson and Chris Stapleton are a bit more country.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as far country as I go. But like The National, Iron and Wine... Very slow.
So people like the phrase, right? It's a vibe. So is that
yeah.
is that your vibe?
Yes. Chill.
How about you, Ranch?
Well, the song I picked, I mean, that's a really difficult exercise because there just is. There's not one song that's like, oh, perfectly encapsulates everything. But this band, I think I've listened to for 20-something years, 25 years. And I picked this just because I think it's a perfect representation of them. So this is Radiohead.
I love Radiohead.
And it's really legit one of the great bands, rock bands of all time. And what's good about them is that they have changed a lot. Like over the years, they just continue to adapt and write new stuff and different things mm-hmm. and different sounds. But you can always kind of tell it's them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's I know that's Radiohead, but this doesn't sound like what yeah. they've done in the past.
But I'm a big fan of, I think, the more chill Radiohead, like King of Limbs and OK Computer.
Yeah.
love those albums.
But see, when I saw your selection for this, Ronj, my first thought was, absolutely, that's Ronj.
Yeah.
Like, that fits you. That, I mean, you like, I know you like Muse also. Like, your personality and those songs, those sounds, they go together.
Yeah, and my favorite band ever is still probably U2, but Radiohead's right there. Mm-hmm. Pearl Jam's up there, and Muse is fantastic. And I didn't really get, even though Muse has been around since like the early 2000s, I didn't start to get into them until, I don't know, like 7-8 years ago, I guess.
I will ask you this too, because I'm a huge fan. So you go the rock side of things, like
I don't know, and I really like hip hop. In fact, I think think hip hop generally. Is I can listen to just about any hip hop song, and the worst ones are still kind of good.
Okay,
to me.
So I will say, like, my like more upbeat music when I want to listen to something more upbeat. Like, I love The Killers. Do you like The Killers?
Oh yeah, I like The Killers.
Okay, yeah, I love The Killers, but they're more pop than
they're
rock.
Pop rock.
Like, I don't really go to Muse.
Right.
I go more The Killer side.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on the hip hop. I almost went with the Mesh, right? Because you guys know I love metal. I almost went, though, with like the Anthrax, Public Enemy, Bring the Noise combo, because it kind of sums up both. Because I grew up, I love Public Enemy. They're one of my all-time favorites. Growing up, I listened to NWA, I loved that. And I think if I had to just generalize all the music that I like, because it's mostly, like, the favorite stuff is heavy. You'll hear in a second. But it's the energy level. I love fast. I like loud. And it doesn't really matter which genre, but it's fast and loud. Like, beats per minute, like, feel like you've got the thump in the chest going.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of stuff. So the hard part for me in this exercise wasn't picking a band or somebody that I would really like. It was definitely going to be Slipknot all along. But I had to find a song that would be okay on the radio. And that wouldn't be too much, because the stuff that I really love is probably too much for most people. I mean, even within their catalog of songs. So I picked a radio-friendly version. This was actually on Guitar Hero. So I picked one that, like, people have heard, people would understand, and for some of you, it's going to be a lot, so maybe turn your radio down just a little bit. Just a little bit. Come on, Amy.
I'm having a visceral reaction.
Yeah.
It's so stressful
to me. You should
see
it.
Yeah.
Oh.
You should. Come on.
This is perfect 2002 sports radio.
I would jump out of a car.
It's from 2006, but not far off.
Yeah.
If you and I were driving somewhere and you turned this song on, I would open the door and jump out of the car.
And roll out.
If people could, if they're watching on Facebook, they can see facebook.com/KMOX. Your shoulders hunched.
Yeah.
And you went forward and you're like, ugh.
Like, all my nerves. It feels like my nerves are like on fire. And it's funny because we'll go on road trips with my friend Noah, and she likes heavier music. Like, what would it be? Industrial, you said.
So you're thinking like Nine Inch Nails, Ministry.
Yep. Yeah. And then she also likes heavy EDM. And we have a contract signed. None of that.
Yeah.
None of that. I can't do it.
EDM doesn't do it for me at all. So I said I don't like country. I don't like EDM either. I can never get into that. And I got a lot of buddies who love that stuff. But the metal, it's like, you know what? I'm telling you, it reminds me of, have you seen the Ben Affleck movie, The Accountant?
Yeah.
You know where, so he's got like a sensor, well, I think he's autistic, right?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
And so there are these scenes, the character is, in the movie, and there are these scenes where he puts himself in a dark room, he's got like strobe lights, and he's blasting that kind of music, and he's like banging himself in the shins with this wood pole. I feel like people listen to that so they can feel something.
Essentially, it's like,
you know, like, it's just, I can't.
Well, see, here's the way I describe the draw to it, because a lot of people don't get it. I'm cool with that. Like, nobody, not trying to convince anybody. But the draw of it is, when you're at the show, it's the energy of the Super Bowl every time. Every show is that level of energy.
Well, I see. I think
like so when you go to a big sporting event. So if the Cardinals are in Game 7 of the World Series this year, the energy in that stadium at the highest points will be that entire concert the whole time.
Right. And I think, but this is funny because we talk about how the music really does illustrate your personality. So my brain is constantly going. I always joke with Michael Kelly. He said he has ADD because he'll look around and see a squirrel and be distracted. I'm distracted by what's going on, like, in my head. I live in the back of my head. And so imagine 1,000 computer tabs open. That's my brain all the time. And when I listen to music like that, it's like all the sound and the pop-up ads for all 1,000 tabs come on at the same time.
Is that why you keep freezing?
Yes.
You got too many tabs open.
Oh, my gosh. No, but it
she
is
was
why,
frozen earlier
it
today.
It is why I can be very distracted, and people can say things, and I miss it. It's because 1,000 tabs are on in my brain.
So we just got a text from, I would like to call him now a friend, Sean. Who says he's like me, he's a huge metalhead. And he said, the thing that makes me like music is the energy and how it makes you feel. And that's what it is to me. Because when you're at those shows, your heart rate is up. You're excited. The hair on the back of your neck is standing up. I mean, if you're an adrenaline junkie, which I think I am, that's what it is. It's it's that feeling of the thump in your chest and that your energy level is raised up. Like
you are...
basically high on that energy.
What you get from that concert and what it does to you is what I get from hanging out with you. I feel like, what?
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but see, you don't like that feeling. I like that feeling. I love the energy in there. I like it sometimes.
I don't need it all the time.
It's all I listen to.
And I appreciate it.
I went to sleep listening to that album last night.
You did not.
I did.
That is insanity.
Volume 3 of the Subliminal Verses.
That would be...
I think I fell asleep right before that song. So right, Pulse of the Maggots, probably, which is another great one.
Cruel and Unusual Punishment.
Oh, no.
Pulse of the Maggots?
So would you agree? Yeah, it's an inside thing. I don't need to explain it. The fans call themselves maggots because basically you're the dregs of society. People look down on you and they unify around that and kind of celebrate the fact that everybody dislikes you and your music. Oh. And people enjoy that.
Yeah. I don't look down on you because I know that everybody has different tastes. I mean, it would be what a boring world if we all had the same taste. And tastes change. I get super stressed.
But I think their theories there with the three of us, they fit. What they're talking about with the personality types and how you are, I think what we've just played as examples, I think it fits.
How would you describe Ronch then?
To me, he's Radiohead. Like when I saw he put that in there, I'm like, that's Ronchy. That's a little bit edgy.
Tom York is actually a genius.
It's exactly right.
No, but I mean, like, the sound of the music, the vibe of it is him. There's a lot of chill, but there's also a little smart-ass edginess to it. A little bit angry, but not too much.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
Where mine is, you know, the volume's up to 11 on a scale of 10.
Yeah. Kevin used to, when we
and
worked...
I'm probably the loudest person you know.
Oh, God, there's no question about that.
Okay, I have a bone to pick with the newsroom.
What?
I also said Kevin is the loudest person we know.
And they said it's you.
They can hear me the most.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe it's the pitch.
I think it's the pitch. Oh, are you saying that I'm shrill?
Compared to me, yes. Yes.
100%. All right. Well, Kevin, if you're done talking and Amy's done squawking, let's go to break. Let's go to break.
What?
Who let the crow in here?
That sounded like a country lyric. Whose vibe is this?
None of us in this room.
I don't know.
This is Mighty Boss Tones, right?
Yeah, this is one of those I hear
from
it
the
and
90s?
I'm like,
yeah, you could punt this one into the sun.
I'm with you, dude.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah. I'm totally
it's
with
bad.
You.
Awful.
I really do try. I don't judge anyone for the music because, again, I have the music that nobody likes. I get that completely.
Yeah. So, somebody likes it.
No, but very small percentage of people listen to the stuff that I do. And I'm okay with that. It's fine. No big deal. I don't expect others to like it. And that's why I don't pick on other people's music, but I will pick on certain songs.
Oh.
That song right there.
Bad.
You know what the worst song ever is? The Christmas Shoes.
I would honestly have to agree with you.
That's a horrible song.
It is so bad.
It's so bad.
In every way.
And I love Christmas music, not that song.
I love Christmas tune. That's a really bad song. There's another Christmas song I promise you guys have never heard.
Okay.
And I'm going to bring it to you when it's time.
You know what? That sounds like a draft day Friday. Worst Christmas songs.
All of them.
No, we can do that.
I'm just kidding.
Kevin's going to pick the best one.
I will say, though, but like the segment we just did is my best explanation for why I generally do not like Christmas carols. It's not...
It doesn't You can't bang your head against the wall with Christmas carols.
It's not my kind of music. Like, I love Christmas Time in Hollis. I love the Run DMC Christmas song. It's fantastic. I hate that old-timey music, the crooners and all that stuff. I hate that so much.
I love old-timey music.
That I have this negative reaction when I hear it. And to me, that's all I hear with most Christmas carols. But
you just haven't heard the Vince Guaraldi trio yet.
Oh, man. That's true. That killed it. At least 2 out of 3.
I like Run, Run, Rudolph with Bruce Springsteen. I like the U2 Christmas song. I like those. They're fine. They're okay because it sounds like something I would listen to.
See, and this is why when I say I don't like country music, what I mean is like Luke Bryan, that guy in pop country.
Isn't it Bryant? No, it's Bryan.
I don't know. He's the one, he's got kind of a, never mind. I like old-timey, like Patsy Cline.
Oh, God.
I could listen to that on
vinyl.
Well,
no, that's good. It's good, but it just, it's perfect for you.
Johnny Cash. But I do love Frank Sinatra.
Did you just say John Tesh?
Johnny Cash.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, John Tesh would be embarrassing.
I know. That's what I'm like.
What does John Tesh sing?
I don't think he sings. No, he plays keyboard.
Oh.
No, I think he sings.
Does
but he?
He
also, he wrote the NBA theme song for NBC.
What's the NBA theme song?
I can't remember now. And he was super, when the NBA switched broadcast companies, he tried to get them to take it, and he said, I'll give it to you for free, you don't have to pay me, and they were like, nope.
Yep.
The NBA theme song is, it sounds like Heart of a Champion.
That is what
he's using it.
Let's say that ripped off the NBA
they sampled that song.
That's exactly what it is. They took it from that.
Okay.
Yeah. So John Tesh was behind the Heart of a Champion.
I cannot believe, how do you not like Frank Sinatra?
Frank Sinatra.
It's not offensive.
I love it.
But
Amy, Amy, how do you feel about Frank Sinatra? Oh, yeah. I think he's good, too.
Are you saying I'm shrill?
I can't believe it was perfect. Are you saying I'm shrill?
Hey, guys, don't like either of you.
See you guys tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. DGS is next here on KMOX.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.